Okay, it is Monday, the 4th of March, 2024, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I call this meeting of the Veterans and Military Affairs Finance and Policy Committee to order. We have a quorum present. Major Olson, have you had a chance to review the minutes for February 26th?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the minutes from the last meeting.
Good. Major Olson moves the minutes for the last meeting. All in favor of approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Good. Minutes are approved. Next, we'll do the Pledge of Allegiance. Representative Lissigard, if you would lead us in the pledge, please.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. First bill we have today is a bill for Representative Bliss. If you'd like to come forward, Representative Bliss, and move your bill and describe it, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My bill is HF 4336, and it is allowing for a new veteran cemetery in northern Minnesota. If you look at the map, I don't think we have a map pretended just yet, but the Bemidji area would be a great location for it. The department has said that they don't want a veteran cemetery more than 2.5 hours from any veteran in the state. And if you remember from previous sessions when we were looking at the veterans home, we had roughly 31,000 veterans in that area. So it'd be serving a large population of veterans. Let's see. And I think we're going to have some testifiers come up.
If you'd come forward, please, Mr. Jarvis. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is Andrew Jarvis. I am the Director of Veterans Programs and Memorial Affairs with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And we do have a quick presentation. We can show you a map. Looks like it's connected to a different computer or something. I don't know.
Well, you're getting ready
to
that.
Well,
is this the area that's supposed to cover the north western part of the state?
Yeah, correct. So we did provide the slides ahead of time, so you may have the printed copies. Essentially, this is looking at the number of state veteran cemeteries that we have throughout the state of Minnesota. This journey began back in 2008. When we submitted a pre-application for the Duluth State Veterans Cemetery, and then in 2009, the legislature appropriated $1.5 million for us to move forward with the design and acquisition of land to expand our state veteran cemeteries from at the time, which was one facility in Little Falls. Many of you have had the pleasure of seeing this expansion come to life with our cemeteries in Preston in 2015, Duluth in 2018, and then most recently with the opening of our Redwood Falls State Veterans Cemetery this past fall in 2023. What we're seeking now is simply the permission to move forward and start to scope out a new and final fifth State Veterans Cemetery in northwestern Minnesota, which we believe will end up in the Bemidji area. When the National Cemetery Administration looks at their overall map throughout Minnesota. They have a goal of providing a dignified burial space for 95% of veterans within 75 miles in their home, and there's organically a gap in Minnesota around that Bemidji area. The state is served by not only our four state veteran cemeteries, but the federal cemetery at Fort Snelling, and there's also a federal cemetery in Fargo, North Dakota. So placing one in Bemidji, if you were to look at the map provided, really provides that coverage for northwestern Minnesota. If approved, what this will allow us to do is really start to invest some staff resources and time into talking with our partners, whether it be the Department of Natural Resources or the county government up there, and looking at parcels of land that would be ideal for this, and using existing money from our cemetery maintenance and development account to do some due diligence soil samples before we would move forward with officially identifying a site and submitting a pre-application to the National Cemetery Administration, which is the entity that provides a grant to construct a facility. So we definitely would be coming back to the legislature once we have a site identified to propose that to you all and also request some additional funds to help with the design of the facility.
Good. Are there any questions? Representative Bliss moves that House File 4336 be referred to the Capital Investment Committee. Do you have any final remarks, Representative Bliss?
Appreciate your support. Thank you.
Good. Okay. So this is moving on to capital investments. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Good. Thank you. Good. Thank you, Lead Bliss. The next bill we have today is being presented by Major Olson. It sounds good to hear that, doesn't it?
It's really new, I'll tell you that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 4334.
Good. Representative Olson moves House File 4334 to be laid over for possible inclusion. And Mr. Jarvis is here also to help present with that. If you would present your bill, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a very clean, cut and dry piece of legislation. Federally, there is a way to remove benefits from service members or former service members who have committed certain acts, such as treason. If someone has betrayed the nation, they probably don't deserve, or I can tell you that they don't deserve the recognition and the benefits that soldiers who have honorably served deserve. And so federally, there is a way to make that happen, to take those federal benefits away. There's currently no connection between the way that the state can do it versus the federal government can do it. We cannot do that. And this would clean it up and say, if federally you are found to betray your nation or perform a couple other nefarious acts against our country, then we too in the state of Minnesota have the ability to take those benefits away from you.
Good, thank you. Mr. Jarvis, do you have any comments at all?
Yes, thank you. So I just want to be clear, this is really about the MDVA having a technical fix to a problem that we are made light of. As the representative mentioned, the federal VA has a process to move forward with the forfeiture of benefits. It is a pretty complex process, and only individuals who have been convicted or plead guilty of very specific crimes result in the forfeiture of those benefits. Those forfeiture actions are processed by our local St. Paul VA regional office for the entire nation. So we organically have a lot of connections and partnerships with our St. Paul regional office, making implementing this and collaborating on identifying those individuals a little easier for us. This is not a big problem. It's more of a technical fix that would give us a tool in our toolbox if we were to have an individual who had forfeited their rights to federal benefits, being able to let that individual know as well that the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota have revoked their privileges to state-funded benefits. Some of these benefits can include the State Soldiers Assistance Program, admittance to one of our many Minnesota veterans homes, and other services that are provided by state-funded taxpayer dollars. I know we had briefly talked about the list of crimes. This does not include it does not include all felony crimes. These are pretty serious crimes listed under Chapter 61 of the U.S. Federal Code to include treason, genocide, and, you know, the mishandling of information, selling private information to other nations such as China or Iran. Depending on any questions.
Good. Representative Weems.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Jarvis, and Major Representative Olson. It's U.S. Code Title 38. It mirrors what's in federal statute. Would Minnesota follow if there is the loss of the veterans benefits on the federal, and then Minnesota would enact, or would Minnesota even do its own investigation if it had some information, even though they still retain their federal benefits? Do you understand?
Yep.
Okay.
Mr. Jarvis?
Mr. Chair, Representative Veans. So we would follow the federal government's decision to forfeiture. So we would not be standing up a team of investigators and making our own determinations. If the federal VA received from the U.S. Attorney General's office a list of an individual who had pled guilty or was found guilty under one of these crimes and they forfeited their rights, it would be processed by the federal VA, and then we would get a notification and add them into our system as having no eligibility for benefits because of that. Just as if someone were to have their rights reinstated because on appeal, the conviction was overturned or they received a presidential pardon, if the federal VA reinstated their benefits, so would the benefits to the state of Minnesota.
And just one follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Mr. Jarvis, just for clarification, if the spouse of a veteran or the child of a veteran is receiving some benefit and they're not involved in whatever the incident is, would they still retain those benefits that the service member was due, even though they're convicted and removed from that benefit? So it's more on the dependents.
Mr. Jarvis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eanes, they would lose their entitlement to the benefits as well. Pretty much all of our benefits stem from the veteran's eligibility. That is kind of the primary entry point, and if the veteran is eligible, then they themselves and their dependents become eligible for various benefits.
One final question, Mr. Chair, and just following up, is that how the federal process works as well? Is that the dependents lose their benefits?
Mr. Jarvis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eanes, correct. That is how the federal government handles entitlement to benefits as well.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Are there any other questions? Representative Olson, do you have anything to add?
No, Mr. Chair. I would just renew my motion that we lay the House File 4334 over.
Okay, thank you, Representative Olson. The bill is laid over. Next, we have Representative Bennett, House File 4335. And Mr. Johnson is coming up to assist. I move House File 4335 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Bennett, to your bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good to be here. I'm just going to give you a very brief introduction, but basically what this bill does is strikes a sentence that veterans home administrators serve at the pleasure of and report directly to the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs. There has been a lot of changes throughout the years of the kind of chain of command of who reports to whom. And I'm going to let Mr. Johnson explain more, but this is just a needed clarification in law as to what's already happening.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Johnson, if you ready to identify yourself and proceed.
Certainly. Chair Newton, members of the committee, Ben Johnson. I'm the legislative director for MDVA, also the interim deputy commissioner for programs and services. And actually, that concise description is very accurate. The Minnesota Veterans Homes became part of the agency back in 2000. You could tell us you were there.
Yes.
Your bill. So there's some cleanup needed in terms of the alignment of the Veterans Home administrators, and that they had been serving at the pleasure of the commissioner and reporting directly to the commissioner. Well, in reality, we have now 8 Veterans Homes in the state, and so no longer makes any sense to have that direct chain of command when you have a deputy commissioner in place as well. So this is simply striking that one sentence and has the functional change of the reporting goes through the deputy instead of directly to the commissioner.
Good, thank you. Are there any questions? Good. Okay, I renew the motion that House File 4335 be laid over and bills laid over. Thank you, Representative Bennett. Mr. Johnson. House File 4344, Representative Coulter. Please move and describe your bill. And Mr. Jarvis is coming up as well. And I think Doug Wortham from Veterans Programs is coming as well. Representative Coulter moves House File 4344 that it be referred to Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee. And if you proceed with your Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is indeed, excuse me, that is indeed my motion. So I will be brief. The experts here can explain it far better than I can. House File 4344 is a policy bill brought forward by the Department of Veterans Affairs to streamline and modernize education benefits within our state soldiers assistance program. Last year, the MDVA and the Wilder Foundation surveyed a diverse group of veteran stakeholders with the purpose of examining these particular benefits. And came forward with the 4 recommendations that have been incorporated into this bill. So this bill does the following 4 things. It sunsets the current veteran education benefit, a one-time $750 grant for veterans who have exhausted their GI Bill benefits without earning a bachelor's degree. This benefit is pretty chronically underutilized and is offset by increased benefits for the Minnesota GI Bill that we passed in our budget last year. It also expands the surviving spouse and dependent education benefit to spouses and children of veterans with a service-connected disability of 70% or greater. It consolidates the educational assistance to POW MIA dependents within the same section of statute as existing state soldier assistance program education benefits. And finally, it increases the annual educational assistance stipend to $1,500. With that, I think I will let the folks who really know what they're talking about talk about it.
Mr. Jarvis.
Great. Good morning, everyone. We're going to start off with Doug Wortham testifying.
Yes. Mr. Wortham, please come forward and identify yourself and then make your presentation.
Good afternoon. Thank you. My name is Doug Wortham. I am the Deputy Director of Veterans Benefits with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Okay. The Congressman did a nice job of summarizing, and I will make this brief in order to hit the points that I believe that we need to hit in order to clarify exactly what we're asking for. So again, thanks for the opportunity to speak to you today to modify provisions related to the State Soldiers Assistance Program education benefits. The 4 main items that we are going to cover, as already discussed, is of course the sunsetting obsolete veteran education benefits, incorporating like veteran education programs, expanding spouse and dependent child education benefits, and also consolidating authority for veteran education programs under one division. Now, you might be asking yourself, why is this important, or even why now? In 2022, the MDVA collaborated with the Wilder Foundation to conduct a year-long assessment of the state soldiers' assistance program to ensure the program remained responsive to the evolving needs of our Minnesota veterans and their families. There were over 5,600 veteran respondents to the survey, along with 153 stakeholder entities like state government, veteran service organizations, county veteran service officers, and other veteran service entities or partners. One of the major themes that kept rising to the surface in that Wilder study was the recommendation to enhance current education benefits. So over the last year, we have been analyzing the results of the study, the recommendations, reviewing our current programs and processes, and evaluating our divisional structure and responsibilities. We've discovered that since the implementation of the Minnesota GI Bill, there isn't a need to continue offering the veteran education benefit, as usage is basically non-existent. Additionally, the current benefit amounts have not kept pace with market rates, and we believe the program restricts a larger population of our veteran spouses and dependents from their pathway to a post-secondary education. And lastly, we believe it makes sense to consolidate the veterans education programs currently administered through the State Soldiers Assistance Program to the Education and Occupational Resources Division within the MDVA. You'll see here is a historical slide, and it shows the data pertaining to implementation of the various education programs. It started in 1943 with the original benefit being offered to the veteran or surviving child. This benefit was a $250 lifetime amount. Then in 1947, the benefit was adjusted to provide a $250 stipend to surviving children on an annual basis. However, the veteran benefit remained a $250 lifetime amount. In 1953, the program expanded to add the tuition waiver to the public university for surviving children. In 1980, the education stipend was raised to $350. This continued to be an annual amount for surviving children and a lifetime amount for the veteran. In 1983, we saw the implementation of the POW-MIA benefit, which provided a dependent spouse or child $250 annually and an authorization upon duly accepted for enrollment in any Minnesota public post-secondary institution to attend the institution to obtain a bachelor's degree or certificate of completion free of tuition or charge. In 2001, the education stipend was raised to $750. This continued to be an annual amount for the surviving children and a lifetime amount for the veteran. Finally, in 2007, the Minnesota GI Bill was established, and surviving spouses became eligible for the SSAP education benefit. The State Soldiers Assistance Program surviving children and spouses education benefits have remained the same since this enhancement in 2007. The next slide here is historical data that I just briefed on the previous slide, but also shows the inclusion of the Consumer Price Index, the information that we've pulled from the U.S. Bureau of Labor. The first dotted line you see extends off the screen. That original benefit of $250 back in 1943 extrapolates to over $4,500 in 2024. If you look at the stipend increase in 1980 to $350 and then again in 2001 to $750, the market price in 2024 is $1,387 and $1,321 respectively. So as you can see, our benefits have not kept pace with market rates. The components to this policy initiative do require an update to Minnesota Statute 197.75 and are as follows. First, we do want to maintain the Surviving Children and Spouses Education Benefits Program. Second, we would like to repeal Minnesota Statute 197.752, which is the Educational Assistance to POW-MIA Dependents Program, and incorporate it into Minnesota Statute 197.75. Doing so consolidates the educational benefits for dependents into one statute. Third, We assess that it makes sense to sunset the veteran education benefit since this program has limited use since the introduction of the Minnesota GI Bill back in 2007. Fourth, we do believe a market assessment, adjustment for the educational assistance stipend is warranted, and we would like to see that increase to $1,500. Lastly, we would like to help create a pathway for veteran-dependent children and spouses to pursue a bachelor's degree by expanding the surviving spouse and dependent education benefit to include the children and spouses of veterans who have 70% or greater service-connected disability as rated by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs. The implication of this expansion is not something that we take lightly. So to talk about some of the overall program usage and what this expansion might look like for future usage, I'll turn it over to Andrew Jarvis, and I do want to make sure that we point this out. We are not asking the committee for more money, and we are not asking for new money. Mr. Jarvis.
Thank you, Mr. Worth.
Thank you.
Mr. Jarvis.
Thank you, Doug. So this first graph here shows the program usage of our SSAP dependent education program over the last 6 years. So starting in 2013, you can see in 2014 there were 103 vouchers that were processed through our department, tuition waivers going out to our state colleges and universities, and that's down to fewer than 40 vouchers processed in 2023. I show you this to tell you that our schools that we partner with have had a historical, time where they've processed more vouchers and waived more tuition than they are doing now. When we look at what this impact of the expansion, because that's the largest part of this policy item, what does that mean? I first just want to thank one of our team members, retired Colonel Tim Uecker, Air Force Colonel, worked in NATO, one of our top guys. He's been really looking at this and has been working with a lot of other of our partners to understand this data and to bring forward what these extrapolations look like. So we've worked with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, the Office of the Minnesota State Demographer, the U.S. Census Bureau looking at the American Community Survey data, and we've had several conversations, including both commissioners from MDVA and OHE, with the Minnesota Office of Higher Education to ensure that the data that we were projecting out was as accurate as possible, because we know that's really important for the decision makers at the table. So looking at the Minnesota population, we have 5.7 million members. We have just under 300,000 Minnesota veterans, and there's about just under 32,000 Minnesota veterans with a 70% service-connected condition. And then further, there's only 7,821 veterans in Minnesota that have a 70% service connection or higher with dependents in their household, dependent children. And then when we look at the potential eligible dependent children, we come to a number of 312. And we looked at a lot of different factors with our partners on how to come up with that 312. We used a rough from the U.S. Census Bureau ACS data that there's 1.8 children per disabled veteran household. So that's kind of our base number of how many children there are in there. We looked at the likelihood of undergrad enrollment in a public institution, the likelihood that they would attend an in-state institution, and then also the take-up rate of how often do people who are eligible for a program go through the steps and apply for that program. And so that all of those factors reduce the number of annual dependents that would be eligible for this expansion to 312 individuals. That number, although it seems high, we think is also critically mitigated by last year's passage of the North Star Promise program. When we look at the North Star Promise program and households that are under $80,000 a year, there's a couple of factors that come into play. Approximately 28% of Minnesota veterans with a 70% service connection or higher have a personal annual income of $75,000 or less. And if we took individuals who would be eligible for tuition costs paid for under NSP, the total number of eligible individuals that we're looking at is 89 a year. So when we look at the cost of this, because that is a real concern for us in addition to others, the cost of these waivers on our institutes of higher education, the University of Minnesota and Minn State, you know, only 89 individuals a year would require the waiver to actually be implemented. And there are other factors into how much the school actually has to write off. There are all sorts of free gift aid that are available. So if the individual is eligible for a federal grant or a state grant or other education benefits, like maybe their veteran parent had transferred post 9/11 GI Bill benefits to the student, all those benefits are going to play into factor here and eventually reduce the total dollar amount that schools have to waive for the remaining tuition after free gift aid money is available. And that's how the program is administered now through Minn State. We have students who go there and have free gift aid through filling out FAFSA, and those dollars are used to essentially reduce the tuition cost and thereby reducing the overall tuition waived by the institution. So to recap, you know, we're looking to maintain what we currently have. We're looking to incorporate other education programs underneath statute 19775 to just make our statutes cleaner and help us get ready for the strategic realignment of these programs to a different division. We're looking to sunset an education program that's no longer utilized. We're looking to increase our stipend from $750 to $1,500. We don't need new money because the appropriation we've identified is sufficient enough to cover that increase. And we're looking to expand the surviving spouse and dependent education benefit to those dependents of 70% service-connected veterans or higher. With that, I'll stand for any questions about the information we shared today.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Jarvis. Are there any questions? Representative Weens?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Sergeant Major Mr. Wortham, and Representative Coulter and Mr. Jarvis. With the, I guess, the funding imbalance, is does the funds that aren't executed in a year, does that just go back to the general fund, or do you maintain those?
Mr. Jarvis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Weens, great question. So I'm assuming you're talking about the appropriation that we plan on utilizing that would cover MDVA's annual stipend portion. That money is an open appropriation, so 100% of the money that doesn't go to veteran independent education programs gets returned to the general fund coffers every year, and it cannot be used for another purpose.
Okay. Thank you for a great presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thank you. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Coulter, do you have anything to add?
The only thing I would add, Mr. Chair, is just to clarify that you could not pay me enough to run for Congress right now. But I just want to thank members again for their time. Obviously, this bill incorporates a number of important provisions that I think will help provide for greater efficiency, accessibility, and equity within educational benefits, and ensures that our state can better serve our veterans and their families. And with that, I would renew my motion that this bill be re-referred to the Higher Education Committee.
Okay, Representative Coulter has renewed his motion. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Good, you're on your way. Next bill is 4412, Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Representative Greenman, please present your bill.
I move my House File 4412 be laid over for possible inclusion?
No, I think it's going to be referred to Health, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Be referred to Health, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Okay, good. Would you like to explain your bill, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a technical bill. It is gives the authority to have a central pharmacy. There's actually already a central pharmacy at Minneapolis Veterans Home that was authorized through rule. On the department's audit, and I think also the OLA audit, said it was a good idea to put it in statute. So that's what this does. This pharmacy provides veterans with both in the Minneapolis Veterans Home, and I think veterans homes around the state, with access to that central pharmacy. With that, Mr. Chair, I will turn it over to the department, to Ben.
Good. Mr. Johnson, if you would make your presentation, please.
Chair Newton, members of the committee, Ben Johnson, Legislative Director and Interim Deputy Commissioner, MDVA. Representative has it exactly correct. This is a simple fix. The department, the OLA audit completed in 2019 and into 2020, determined that they thought that we needed specific authority to run our central pharmacy. We had been running it under this 198006 supplemental program. There are actually two findings. The first was that we needed both authority to do the adult day program, which we were able to track and include a couple of years ago. This is a follow-up. We had been intending to do it through a rule, to an amendment to Rule 9050 to incorporate this specifically. That's still our plan, but we thought best to pursue it as a statutory fix as well. So a very straightforward addition to our supplemental programs authorization.
Good. Thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing none, Representative Greenman renews her motion that the House File 4412 be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None? Okay. That bill is on its way. And Representative Norris, I think you have the last bill for today. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Newton.
If you'd present your bill, Representative Norris.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Newton. I would move House File 3454 be, we're laying this one over, and we do have an author's amendment, the A1 amendment. Chair Newton, members of the committee, you may remember this is a bill that came before us a couple weeks ago. It provides the Adjutant General with the opportunity or the option to provide referral enlistment bonuses. There was a sense among the committee that it was a good idea to give them that latitude, but there some folks pointed out that when the federal government tried something kind of like this a while back, there were some issues that cropped up. So we worked to come up with an author's amendment that puts some safeguards around it to try to prevent those same situations occurring here in Minnesota. I've shared it with members of the committee on both sides of the aisle. I think everybody agrees this A1 amendment does the trick. It requires some notice to the respective committees in the legislature if this referral bonus program is implemented. It requires the development of internal controls for the program. It requires some regulations be developed and reported to the committees here in the House and the Senate. And then it requires the maintenance of records regarding who's actually receiving these bonuses so that we can make sure that they are not being misused.
Okay. And because members of the committee did have some questions about this, do we have any further questions, or is this sufficient clarification? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just like to thank Representative Norris for a wonderful amendment that fixes all the concerns that I had. So I appreciate you taking the time and effort to really putting that into place.
Okay. Thanks, Representative Wilson.
Yeah. Let's make sure we get this bill in the order that Representative Norris wants it. All in favor of the amendment one, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? None, seeing none. So the amendment is adopted. And Representative Norris, do you have any final comments?
None further, Chair Newton.
Good. Thank you. The House File 3454 is laid over for possible inclusion in a final bill. Yes, before we adjourn today, I just want to mention we have a trip on Friday to the Minneapolis Veterans Home and to the Bloomington Armory. And if any of you members would like to go on that trip, we're going to leave the state office building at 8:30 in the morning. We'll be back by noon. There will be a bus. So if any of you want to go, please notify Mr. Dockendorf. Good. And seeing no further business before the committee, we are adjourned. Thank you.